Hey, you're listening to the Intentional Mind Podcast, and today we're talking about 7 energy-giving practices that you can use to feel your best. And this episode was inspired by someone who randomly asked me, what do you do to get your energy right? What are some of the practices that you do? And you know, my nerdy self tends to geek out about the processes in the mind and all that stuff. And they were like, no, like, what exactly do you do? Like, what are the practices? They wanted me to simplify it for them. And I think sometimes when people ask me this question, I'm hesitant to say things because I don't know if what works for me to get my energy into alignment is always going to work for them. And I don't want them to adopt a practice that may not be the best fit for them, given their situation, their goals, and how they want to live their life and all of that, right? Because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to do this to feel good, right? Because it's different for everyone. But the stuff that I'm talking about today, the different 7 practices, are things that tend to be backed by science and research that seems to help most of us feel really good. And they're also practices that I actually engage in. So that's why I'm sharing these right now. If you are new here, hello, I'm Angela Barnard. You can call me Ange. If you've been around, thank you all so much for continuing to show up. It means so much. It makes it worth it for me to sit behind this mic and send some messages to you as I work on my own stuff in my own brain and I try to improve my life right here with you. So again, thank you for being here. Let's just get right to these different practices. So these practices are all a form of what I like to consider self-care practices, self-love practices, because I think the more that you show up and you love on yourself, the more that you can give love, the more that you can be that person that brings the joy to a situation, because I think joy stems from love. So, what are the practices that I consider to be self-love that I also practice? So, the first one is, a lot of these sound might be repetitive to you. I've been listening to the show because back in the day I did an episode on morning routines. And these are some of the practices that I engage in every day as part of my morning routine to help me show up and feel my best. And if you haven't heard that episode, go back and listen to it because it really, I think, helps you develop a good morning routine for yourself or give you some good ideas of different practices you can use. So with that being said, the first one is to practice mindfulness. That is something I try to do every single day. And what that means to me is looking at what's happening in my mind. That's what I consider this form of mindfulness. So I like to journal and write down. I use this practice of the morning pages that was developed by Julia Cameron, where you basically just write down 3 pages of all of your thoughts, and it can be just random things. So I have a smaller notebook that I use, and I just go through 3 pages and random things that are in my mind. It doesn't matter what it is. I write it down. Sometimes I write things down like, I don't know what to write today. I'm tired. I think this is annoying. Like, it can even be something like that. It's all to clear out my mind. I like to think about this as cleaning the trash out in my mind. It's not always trash stuff that I'm writing down. Sometimes it's my best ideas come at this time. But I always want to creating space. Like, I think about it almost like you have a computer, right? You have all this stuff stored on the hard drive of the computer. It's like taking an external hard drive and moving things over so that I can create more space. So it allows me to create more. That's how I think about it. And then sometimes I straight up think about it as you're cleaning out the trash because it's starting to get stinky up in there, right? There's too much stuff that you're holding on to that may not be serving you. And this journaling practice can really help you with that. Don't underestimate the power of journaling. There's tons of studies that show how this can help with reducing anxiety, depression. There's studies about it helping with your immune system, boosting your immune function, which makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go into that in a little bit. Actually, let's go into it right now since I'm looking at my notes about it. So journal writing can help boost immune function. So this might come as a surprise to many people. But what they have found in research, this woman named Karen A. Bakey, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, and Kay Wilhelm. So this is what they have reported, that those who journaled for 20 minutes a day on 3 to 5 occasions saw the following benefits. So what they did was they took a big group of people and they studied what happened if they journaled 20 minutes a day. So these are the benefits that they saw. They saw fewer stress-related visits to the doctor, an improved immune system functioning, reduced blood pressure, improved lung function, and improved liver function. So how can the simple act of journaling improve your health? It allows a person to develop what's called a coherent narrative of their life. In other words, it enables a person to take the events they experience and integrate them into their overall perspective on life. I like to think about this as they become the observer of what's happening in their life, and then they get to decide what to do with it versus being trapped in it. Because that's what a lot of us are. We're like, we're just reacting to the thoughts, and we're not realizing that we have the power to decide, that we are external from our thoughts. And journaling allows us to do that, to look at what's happening from that observer effect. This is a higher level of awareness that's happening. When you think about energy, it's a higher level of energy that's being produced because you're not reacting. That's the lower levels. The higher level has to do with choosing, being the creator of your experience. So, what this then allows someone to do is to think more positively about their life and create a holistic picture of themselves in relation to the rest of the world. It follows that a person with a positive, holistic view of themselves is less prone to things like depression and anxiety, both of which can cause a variety of physical health problems. So that was me reading my notes to you, but I'm going to break this down and how I perceive this. I perceive this as you shifting your own energy. You're reducing the catabolic energy, that kind of negative energy that shows up. You're reducing it because what you're doing is you're shifting yourself to this higher awareness. So when you're doing that work in the morning, let's say when you're journaling, you're clearing out that energy. So that energy doesn't have the power to be up in your body, destroying your body. That's how I see it. Because we know what those negative thoughts and what stress can cause on our body physically, the harm, the disease that can be caused with it. But if you're cleaning it out every day, you're not allowing it to grow and fester in there and to generate. That's how I see it. So numerous studies have also shown that gratitude has specific health benefits. I know you've heard this. Gratitude is directly tied to things like increased exercise and improved quality of sleep, both of which promote long-term well-being. Gratitude, let's say this again, is directly tied to things like increased exercise and improved quality of sleep. Isn't that interesting? That in a sense, the more you practice gratitude, you're more likely to exercise, you're more likely to sleep better. It causes you to show up as a better version of yourself with other things outside of gratitude. Because you know what I think this has to do with is when you're practicing gratitude and you're generating that kind of energy, you feel more inspired and encouraged versus when you're at that lower depression kind of state and you're not grateful for things, because gratitude lives at a higher awareness. So depression, anxiety, all of that stuff might be around a 1 and a 2 on the energetic scale, right? 4 is when we start getting into gratitude. So at a 1 and a 2, you're not experiencing like, oh, I'm so grateful for all these things. That's why I'm so depressed. No, like they don't live with each other. They're different frequencies. But when you start to practice gratitude, you write down the things that you're grateful for. That's what I do in my morning journaling practice. I also like write down whatever my mind is thinking, but I also add in the gratitude portion. So before I'm done with my writing, there's some form of gratitude practice in there. And it feels so good. I did it this morning. I felt so much better than when I sat down to write. And I was like, wow, like I really am so grateful for my life and all the opportunities I've created, all the meaningful connections I've had, my amazing clients. Like lately, my clients have just been killing it. Like, I don't even know how to describe this. I'm like, what is happening? But they're just creating so much cool opportunities for themselves. And it's so cool to be connected with people like that. that are intentional about designing their life, that are willing to go and seek assistance where it's needed, that are willing to invest in themselves and get someone to partner with them. Sometimes when I'm working with my clients, I'm like, am I even helpful? Like, what am I doing that's even helpful? Like, I have my mind trash that kicks in. And I realize just how powerful it is that I sit there and I listen and I give them the space to brainstorm all their amazing ideas. And then I'm like, okay, cool. You have all these ideas. What are we going to do next? But that's one of my things that I'm super grateful for. And reflecting on that this morning, it just made me feel so good about my life. So if you're feeling like crap, I guarantee if you sit down and you get your brain to focus on what it is that you're grateful for, you ask yourself that, you get your brain to think that, that will shift your energy because it shifts your energy to a higher awareness state versus maybe those lower energy levels that we might be feeling. I thought it was interesting, though, that it actually makes you want to exercise more. And then, of course, that leads to a domino effect. Everything is connected. But it makes so much sense because when I'm showing up in the morning and I feel like grateful, I'm inspired, I'm rocking that energy, I'm all about like, I want to go for a walk. But when I'm like, or I'm going to go run or I'm going to exercise or whatever, like, but when I'm showing up with the lower energies, I'm like, I don't want to do anything, you know, right? So it's interesting how we can generate this by journaling. You can journal on so many things and generate the feelings that you want to feel. The best way that you can do this is by asking yourself a question related to how you want to feel. So what are you grateful for? What inspires you? What brings you joy? Even getting your brain to think about the last time that you were excited about something and you felt joy and journaling on that, because what happens is you will flood your system with those kinds of feelings. And then from that place, you can move on and have an awesome day flowing with that energy. So there's so much power in journaling. There were so many other studies that I was reading when I was doing the research for this episode. And I was like, I can't go over all of them because you'll be here all day. But it's a really good practice to have. And it's one of the things that I recommend the most to people. There's even a whole field called narrative medicine that's involved in helping people, you know, heal themselves through writing and journaling and creating stories and all of that, which I'm going to talk a little bit about here as we continue on. So moving on, let's go to the second thing that I love to practice that gets my energy right, as I would say, makes me feel good, is moving my body. And it can be in any way, like even when I feel like I don't feel like I want to go out and like hardcore, like, you know, do a hardcore workout or something. I'm just like, move your body in any way, get energy flowing through your body, especially if you're feeling low energy. This will wake you up. It obviously energizes you. And what's really happening here is we know that the mind and body are connected. And here's what's in my notes. While your brain is the master control system of your body's movement, the way you move can also affect the way you think and feel. You know they're talking to each other, the mind and the body, right? So people used to ask me all the time in my career coaching, they say, well, what do I do if I feel really nervous in an interview? I'm like, I just can't manage my mind. What do I do? And I always say, you manage your body. You move your body in the position of confidence. And as you hold your body open, you open up your chest, right? And you do that power posing, as some call it. After 2 minutes, now we're releasing different hormones in your body related to confidence-related hormones. But that was you doing something with your body to change how you think and feel because it's both connected. So if you're feeling down or low, know that if you can't get your mind to change, you can't get yourself to think of something different, you can always move your body. You can shift that energy, let it flow through it. I like to even think about that when I'm moving my body or working out. It's like me shifting energy and it's flowing, you know, moving out the stuff maybe that I don't want. And again, it's a way of cleansing the system. That's kind of how I see it. All right. So here's another thing in my notes. Movement therapies are often used as adjunctive. Yeah, that's the word. Sometimes I'm like, does my Asian accent kick in and I don't know how to pronounce things? And then the other people are like, no, because you never actually spoke your native language, Angela. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, my mom is from Laos. She came to the U.S. during the Vietnam War, and her family's from Laos in Thailand. And it's funny because when I was in broadcast journalism school, they were like, your family is from Southeast Asia. I'm like, how do you know that that's where my Asian-ness comes from? And they said my accent. And I was like, what? I have an accent? That's so strange. But they said because I was picking up little things from being around my mom, even though I never actually spoke the native language. And that's a side note about how powerful our subconscious is. It's always going to mock the environment your subconscious is. So that's why you want to surround yourself with people you want to be like. That's a whole other side note that was sparked from me looking at my notes here. Okay, so let me read that again since I got off on a rant. Movement therapies are often used as treatments for depression and anxiety when mental effort, psychotherapy, or medication is not enough. When that's not working, they often result to movement therapy. So when you are too exhausted to use thought control strategies such as focusing on the positive or looking at the situation from another angle, movement can come to the rescue, just like the example I said before. I like to think about it when you can't manage your mind, manage your body. So by working out, going on a meditative walk by yourself, or going for a synchronized walk with someone, you may gain access to a back door to the mental changes that you desire without having to psych yourself into feeling better, right? Because what happens is now you're going to release different hormones. So chemicals are going to change your body that are going to cause you to feel a different way. So again, you can't manage the mind, you manage the body. And then there was a lot of nerdy research that I was geeking out a little bit over here with about like doing activities with other people and the effect that that has on your brain by watching someone else. And it was showing that, like, think in a nutshell about you're more confident. And I don't remember why, but it got me thinking about the times that I used to regularly go to the yoga studio and I would surround myself with other people and work out with them. And I, if I remember correctly, I do feel like I was like really confident during that period of my life. Maybe not initially when I was still like, who are these people? And you feel like you're like the new kid in school and you don't know who you to eat with at lunch. Like once you get beyond those feelings, I do feel like I was starting to develop this confidence. And there was some research to back that up. I thought that was interesting. All right, so let's go to the third practice that I have that I feel like really serves me is honoring my dreams. Like taking time to honor my dreams. Taking, like prioritizing the time, planning it out. And I think that this makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to know that I'm always working on being the person that I want to be, that I'm becoming her now, that I'm intentional about that. Because you're right, we know, I've said this a gazillion times, the number one regret of the dying is what? You can probably fill in the blank now if you've been listening to this show. The number one regret of the dying is that I didn't live a life true to myself. You know, I wish I would have lived a life true to myself, not the life that others expected of me. I think it's worded something like that. Right. So when you take time to honor your dreams, when you take time to prioritize time, you take time to prioritize time. That sounds weird, but it's true, right? You plan to do the things that are important to you and make progress on them. When you actually do that, and you actually follow through and you act as a person of self-integrity, like we talked about before, it feels so good. You make yourself so proud and you make progress. And I think a lot of us are walking around with regret of not working on our dreams, of not making our desires a reality, of playing small. We regret that. We can feel it and it eats away at us. And it affects your energy. It generates that catabolic energy for you because you're not showing up as a person you want to be. And somewhere inside of you, you know that. Right. So one of the practices I do regularly that just helps my energy is, again, I practice honoring my dreams in so many different ways. And I know when I feel off, like this morning when I make Ian breakfast every morning. And this morning I woke up later than I wanted to. So I didn't have the time to journal and do my stuff before he went to work. I still will do it. After he leaves, I'll quickly like prioritize it because it makes me feel good. But I can tell I'm off when I'm making him breakfast. It's like I'm just kind of frustrated that I didn't take the time to work on my dreams, you know, that I didn't move. Like I already was jumping into the mode of like doing all the stuff for him and I didn't take time to love on me. And it was hard, I feel like, to give love when I'm not loving myself first. And this is not a selfish thing. It's I think about it, too, is like you can't give what you don't have. Right. So I told him that this morning and he was like, that makes so much sense. And I was like, you know, the thing that makes me feel the best is when I get up earlier and I take that time for myself, because then I get my energy right before I show up for you. So I've talked about this. I've also called it mastery. If you go back to that morning, the episode about morning routines that I did, I said I practice mindfulness, movement, and mastery. The mastery part is me moving forward on my dreams. That's a practice I do every morning. And even if it's like, if you don't have a practice of movement, mindfulness, and mastery in your life, start off small. Start with 5, 5, and 5. 15 minutes. 5 minutes of you moving your body, 5 minutes of you journaling, and 5 minutes of you even just brainstorming or setting an intention for the day. That is huge for you. If you're coming from practicing nothing, start to develop those habits and those that progress will pick up. You'll start to be the person that prioritizes you. And that 5 minutes will make all the difference, because it'll start to increase because you'll want to do more of it. All right. So the next thing, let's back up a little bit. So I wrote this down, thinking about how it would feel to have that dream come true and how can I spark that feeling now? So when I'm thinking about planning, honoring my dreams and setting time for them, I always do the visualization of like, if I had that now, like how would it feel? And I see myself having it. And then I think about, oh, I'd feel so much abundance. I'd feel so much joy. And then I think, how can I feel abundance and joy right now in my life? Like, how can that happen? And then it might be something as simple as like, I'm gonna have 2 coffees today. I make my 2 of my 4 Sigmatic mushroom coffee that I absolutely love. I'm gonna do 2 of those because it makes me feel abundant. Because I want to generate that feeling now. Because that feeling, remember, is it's energy behind it. It's like turning to the right frequency of the thing I desire. It's like turning to the radio station that plays the music that I want. I think I talked about this on our episode around the law of assumption. I dive deeper into that. Okay, all this stuff is related that I talk about, obviously. Because it's all energy. Everything is energy, hands down. Our faith is energy, our thoughts, the things we create, every single thing is energy. That's what my TED Talk is about. My TED Talk is about harnessing the power of energy to design the life that you want. It's about turning on that secret power that all of us have, but not everyone is tapping into, because they don't realize that there's a switch that they can turn on, that they can use it, you know? All right, that was a side note too. So the fourth thing that I do is I eat things that are life-giving. Like I fuel myself with life-giving things. So I'd like to think about when I say life-giving, what images come up to your mind? Do you think of fried food? Probably not. Do you think of chips, like Doritos, Debbie Snacks, all the things like that? French fries? No, you don't think of those as life-giving. When I think of things that are life-giving, I think of a lot of like fruits and vegetables, and I think of kombucha because there actually is the SCOBY living in the kombucha. So it's like bacteria that's alive, which sounds terribly disgusting, but it's so good for you. The probiotics are so good for you. So I think about the green drinks that I drink with all of the, it's like a powdery mix, but it has all of this really, really good superfoods in it, different veggies that have names that I'm not even familiar with because I don't eat them on a regular basis, but I just trust that this powder thing is good for me, and I've noticed the difference of how I feel. So those are things I think of as life-giving. I also think of rice as life-giving. Maybe it's my Asian background, I don't know, but I love rice with all my heart. I absolutely love rice, and I picture people in the fields just like picking the rice and just like smelling it and feeling good in the fields. I have no idea what those thoughts come into my mind. And like the rice hats that they wear to cover the sun. Maybe it's like a ancestor thing. I don't know. But it makes me feel really good to think that, how life-giving all that is and how so much stuff that you can make with rice. Okay, that's my tangent. And if anybody wants to make a rice like candle, the smell of steaming rice, I absolutely love that smell. That should be a candle. Why is that not a candle? I don't know. Okay. So here's a quote from the Bible that I love related to this. It says, I have given you the seed-bearing plants throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food. So that makes me think about food that we've been given to eat that is life-giving. And then here is, what else is in my notes? I got some good notes. I'm just going to read these to you. As you start to eat real food, your cravings and addictions will be replaced by deep pleasure and satisfaction from naturally sweet things, such as a variety of delicious fruits, as well as vegetables like red bell peppers. I have found this, the more I eat healthier, like vegetables and fruits, the more I want them. Like my body's like, yes, please give me more. It's kind of like when I eat like crap, the more I want to eat like that, because your body, it's also about your body creating addictions. Your brain is designed to create addictions. It truly is, good and bad. So if you know that, your brain is habit forming. So the more that you do something, the more it wants to do it, the more it wants to keep that program running. So even if you are resistant to, because I hear sometimes people are like, I don't like water. I don't want to drink water, which we're going to talk about in a minute here. And I think, well, yeah, because you haven't been doing it. But the more that you make it familiar and the more that you do it, the more you're going to want to do it. The more your body is going to be like, yes, this is an addiction. I want to make this an addiction. It wants to make everything an addiction because it's efficient. And that's what the brain likes to do. It likes to be efficient. So it likes to program things. It likes to make it automatic. How it knows to do that is anything done in repetition. It's like, instead of me repeating, thinking about this and wasting energy on it, I just want to make this automatic. I want to make it easy. I want to make the urge that you go do this thing. And we know it flows well and there's no fear around it. That's kind of how the brain is thinking. I don't know if that makes sense, but it made sense to me. Okay, so Dr. Mark Hyman, you probably have heard his name. He says, the power of real food creates an abundant, healthy life. You can get the most powerful, life-giving energy from your food. The best thing we can do for our health is to focus on all the amazing foods that God has given us. What are all the amazing foods that he has given us? Fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, nuts, seeds. All these he has graciously given to us. So the Bible says, how abundant are the good things that you have stored up for those who fear you. And food is really, this is my note, food is information. Food is not only information, but food is energy. Everything is energy. It has the ability to change our genes. It can completely rearrange things, reverse conditions, and give us the vitality we were created to have. Once you start to enjoy real food, you'll never want to settle for less. And I think that's true. Like the more, like I said before, the more that you eat healthier and you feel your body with real food, the more that you want that. If you continuously practice it, you got to give yourself time to form the habit around it. Because initially you're going to be resisting it. And if you don't have the habit of eating that way, you're going to want to go back to the old ways. And that's normal. That's how the brain works, trying to keep the current program running. But I just noticed that it just feels so good to eat clean. And I think about everything being energy, and this takes it to a whole nother level around even like meat that I eat. Like sometimes I know that I just need more protein. Like I just know that for sure. I can feel that off. But I really try to be conscious of what I'm eating because everything is energy. And if something is really, how do I describe this in the right way without sounding like a nutcase? Like if something is really harmed in the process of it becoming food, let's say it's like brutally murdered or something, and it's just like there's a lot of negative energy around it, I just don't want to put it in my body. And some people might be like, what? This sounds like you're a lunatic to me. That's why you're not eating as much meat. But I don't know. That's just my true thoughts. Is like I think about my pig Wally that I used to have, and I am a girl that loves bacon, straight up bacon sticky rice. I used to absolutely love it, but I don't eat it as much anymore because of one, out of respect for Wally, who was my former pig, and two, because I think about energy and how what was involved in the process to make that, and do I really need that right now? And it's different if I'm doing a long hike and that's all that's available to me. That's a different thing. But I feel like when living where I am now, with everything that's available to me now, if it's something I don't need to have, then I'm not going to have it. Those are my thoughts. And I want to be clear, I'm not here to shame anyone about how y'all eat. Like, I truly think you know what's best for you and what makes you feel best. So just notice what makes you feel best. And I've just been noticing what makes me feel best. And some people would say, it makes me feel the best when I eat steak. Okay, cool. Like that makes you feel the best. That's awesome. As long as you are aware of how you're feeling. A lot of us don't even know what it feels like to feel good though either. We learn this a lot when I hear when people do like Whole30, they realize like how good it feels to feel good. They never knew that they didn't feel good because they were so used to feeling the crappy ways that they felt. They didn't even know what good felt like. When you allow yourself to eat this real food, it changes because you're like, this is what it feels like to feel good. This is what it feels like to feel energized. And again, remember, everything is energy. So what kind of energy you're putting into your body. All right. So with that being said, let's move on to number five. How do I make these so long? I think it's going to be like a quick thing. And it doesn't end up being that way. All right. Number five is to seek out opportunities to have fun. And that's something I practice regularly, is I seek out opportunities to have fun, to try something new, to spark joyful memories for myself. So do you ever notice how things you don't like to do greatly drains your energy? Like if you're involved in tasks and you really don't like to do it, it's like how exhausted you are, right? Because there's resistance. There's catabolic energy being generated. But when you're having fun, it's interesting because it's almost like you have an endless amount of energy, that time flies by so fast. You feel energized. So how can you create more fun in your life? The way that you can do that is by seeking out new opportunities. Try new things, because new things spark dopamine for you. Even using different words, like practicing a different word you can use for the day, a word that makes you laugh. I was just talking to a friend recently about how we call our animals a gazillion different names. Like I read something one day, it's like, what's your pet's name? And then they put down our pet's name and then they're like, but what do you really call them? And there's like a gazillion different names that we use for our pets. And the reason why is because it makes us laugh. Like it brings us joy to call them all these different names. Like, let me give you an example. Steve, our cat, I call him rat demon. I have no idea where that came from. Rat demon, my big boy, my clown boy, mama's baby boy, fat raccoon, like all these kinds of guardian coon, because he always lays at the bottom of my feet. Like there's all these different names I have for him and they make me laugh. And that is fun to me. It's an opportunity for me to have fun by doing that. It's so simple, but it creates a lot of fun. And I'm sure if you have a pet and you call them a gazillion names, it makes you laugh and smile when you think about it. Okay, so let me tell you some fun things I've done lately, because I'm always seeking opportunities to have fun. So just yesterday, Ian and I went to the mall. We never go shopping like at the mall. And we went through the mall and we felt like teenagers. You know, back in the day when you were a teenager, you walked in the mall a lot. And the smell of the Annie's pretzels and just that whole environment just made me think about flashbacks when I used to go through the mall. I'd get all dressed up just to walk through the mall. And anyways, we were talking about that and we were laughing about it. And then there was a photo booth where you could print off those little, you know, those little lines of photos. So Ian and I went in there and we took some photos and we were laughing at how ridiculous our photos was and how that thing snuck up on you. And we're like, dang it. No, we didn't think it was going off. And they're just like really ugly photos that we had taken. It was so funny. And they were always looking for opportunities like that. So recently too, we went and visited Chattanooga, which was awesome. And we stayed in this camper that was on the edge of Lookout Mountain. So it had this beautiful mountain view. And it was so fun being in that camper. It was not even a new camper. It was like an old school camper. And it was just fun trying something new. Like we put a DVD into a DVD player of a Reese Witherspoon movie from back in the day. And we watched it and we just had a blast because it was new to us. We haven't done that in a long time, something like that. We haven't ever stayed in a camper that was all just set up and ready to go for us on the outside looking over a beautiful view on the mountain. And that was something I found on Airbnb. And it was so much fun. And then the other thing we did was we stayed in this tent that was near Bryson City in North Carolina. We stayed in this glamping tent. Like when we got there, it was all set up. It had a bed in it. It had, you know, a heater thing, lights, lamps, all the thing. It was all set up. And I'm like, this is so cool that we don't have to bring all of our camping gear. And I've never glamped like that, where the tent was all set up with a bed. And it was fun because it was different. That's why it was fun. We always try new foods. What did I made something weird yesterday. Like when I go to Trader Joe's, I'm all about what's new here because they always have new things. And I'm like, let me try these. Like I tried these little jalapeno puff rice things yesterday. I bought these new, what was it? French fries. Like there were sweet potato ones I've never had before. And it was so fun to make them. And then another thing that's been fun for me is finding different stickers. Like we have a Yeti cooler and I wanted to find all these stickers to stick on the cooler and I just thought it would be fun. So we've been looking at for those postcards. I love to find postcards to send people or really funny, cool, unique cards. Things like I like to think about what to get someone Like, I found these weird, crazy socks that I wanted to send a friend the other day. And if there's like little gifts I can find, it's just fun. It's like this hunting thing that feels fun, you know? Because sometimes I'm like, I don't want to be buying all a bunch of new stuff because I live in a really tiny house and I don't have the ability to store a bunch of things. And plus, I don't want to. But what else can I find to gift someone else that's just a simple little thing that would brighten up their day? You know, it could even be like they're someone's favorite snack. I just think that stuff is fun. That's the key word here. There's so many ways we can have fun. It doesn't require a lot of money, but it does require you to be intentional about seeking opportunities to have fun. So if you're not having enough fun, I have a whole episode on having fun somewhere back in the mix. So you can go back and find that. So the last, no, we got two more things. The sixth thing that I practice is engaging in creative practices. I always try to be creative, do things that are creative, like writing, creating something, new content related to like a course I'm even designing, or just growing something different. I feel like that's even creative. So in a study published in the Journal of Aging and Health, researchers found that only creativity, not intelligence or overall openness, decreased mortality risk. Like, you're more willing to live longer if you're creative. So one reason they thought may have to do with the fact that creativity is protective of health because it draws on a variety of neural networks within the brain. It causes your brain to really work, right? And this kind of reminds me of the whole concept, if you don't use it, you lose it. So creating art decreases negative emotions, it reduces stress and anxiety, and improves medical outcomes. Not only can being creative help you live longer, but it can improve your quality of health and life too. Because the brain is the command center for all bodily functions, exercising it helps all systems to continue running smoothly. So creativity allows you to exercise your brain. Keeping the brain healthy may be one of the most important aspects of aging successfully. And that was a fact that was shown by creative persons living longer in one of their studies. Another thing that this guy said, Toriano was his last name. He says, creative people's ability to handle stress. So this is a note I wrote next to that. They tend not to get as easily flustered when faced with an emotional or physical hurdle. Stress is known to harm overall health, including obviously cardiovascular, immune, and cognitive systems. Creative people may see stressors more as challenges that they can work to overcome rather than as stressful obstacles they can't overcome. So that's interesting because I have noticed that the people that I tend to claim as creative tend to be way less stressed. They don't walk around all tense and stressed. And I think that has to do with because there are always engaging in creative practices. So sometimes people like to say, well, they're not creative. Like, I'm thinking of one of my clients right now who always says that she's not creative, yet she's always working on creating new business opportunities for herself. And she like geeks out about how a place is going to look and what she's going to put in it, what services are going to be offered. And I feel like that's a way of her being creative. And I don't feel like she walks around as this tense, stressed person. But if I asked her, are you a creative person? She might say that she wasn't. But it's you, I think, a lot of times connecting dots between different things and allowing yourself to play. Creativity is at a higher awareness level, right? That's where that level six kicks in, that flow state. And this is a very playful state. And if you're too tense, if you're too worried about what other people think or what you don't have or whatever, those are the lower energy levels. And you know what they are because you feel it. If you feel that tenseness, you feel that resistance, creativity doesn't live there. It lives at a higher state. So how can you allow yourself to play more and just experiment? It could be with your food. It could be with your space, like moving things around, your plants, just seeing if you can grow something. Like, I've been really geeking out about wanting to grow lion's mane mushrooms because those are in my Four Sigmatic coffee. And they're really great for focus. And there's so many benefits to all these different kinds of mushrooms. And I'm just like, it would be really fun to grow them and then dry them out and make them in this powder form and put them in my coffee even, just for fun. There's an instrument that Ian and I have been really wanting to play, the hand drum. There's so many things. Like, I want to take a course on everything. And just because it's so fun to learn new things. All right. So my last thing is to drink a lot of water. This is a practice that I have that really helps my energy and will help yours as well. So we know that 60% of our body is made up of water. The brain and heart is about 73% water. So just a little bit of dehydration can cause you to significantly reduce your focus, your mood, and your concentration, right? Significantly. So your brain is strongly influenced by your hydration status. Why? Because it mostly is water itself. Studies show that even a mild dehydration, this is what I just said, this could just be like the loss of 1% to 3% of your body weight, can impair many aspects of your brain function. Water throughout history has been represented by purity, life, renewal, and transformation. It's the source of all those things. Purity, life, renewal, and transformation. So if you think about in your life right now, if you want to live with more purity, if you want to change things, transform for the better, water is going to have a part, has a role to play in that, right? It's going to help your brain function better. It's going to help your whole system function better. So in general, how much water should you be drinking? A lot of people will say half their body weight in ounces. One of the things I just read recently is basically you should drink a half ounce to 1 ounce per pound of body weight. So pretty much it would be like a half of your body weight in ounces. But you can also think about it as if someone weighed 150 pounds, they should be drinking 75 to 150 ounces of water a day. If you were on the higher part of that, you'd be drinking about 19 cups of water a day. So for me, if it was like half my body weight, then let's say I weigh 120-ish, then I'd be drinking about 60 ounces a day, which is just under, which is what, 7.5 cups? My math right? Something like that. But I try to shoot for between 10 to like 14 glasses of water a day, depending on how I'm feeling. You also don't want to drink too much, but usually that's never a problem with people. All right. So that's something to consider. Like, how much water are you drinking? Because this is drastically affecting your mental health and how you're focusing and your concentration. So you might need to up that game. And if you do, add something in it that tastes good. If it's not, you can add, I have magnesium that I mix with this berry magnesium. Magnesium is amazing for you. Most people are deficient in it. So that's always a supplement that I highly recommend. I do that in my water. I also do like squirts of lemon, and that helps too. All right, y'all, we got through the 7 energy giving practices to feel good that I also practice. And I invite you to practice as well. So let's do a quick recap of them. I'm just going to list them out real quick. The first one is journaling. And the second one is moving your body. The third is taking time to honor your dreams. Prioritize the time to honor them. The fourth is to eat things that are life-giving. And the fifth thing was to seek out opportunities to have fun. Plan to have fun. Seek out the opportunities. And the sixth is to engage in creative practices. And the seventh is to drink lots of water. And that's it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave a review if you haven't. Thank you so much for being here. Go out there and enjoy your day and try to adopt these 7 different practices. Start with at least one. And if you've already been doing them, kudos to you. Go out there and celebrate. Have an awesome day. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.